Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Bring in show music, please.
Hi, I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on Squawk Pod, has capitalism lost Generation Z? New data from pollster Frank Luntz on what Americans coming of age now think about our systems.
They admire entrepreneurs. They admire small business owners, family businesses they admire. The big corporations, not so much.
The utility of the internet. Verizon CEO Hans Vestberg on making connections work.
Wireless and broadband is so important for every individual, for every organization. I mean, you cannot live without it today.
Plus, Congress works the weekend on foreign aid and an Ivy League university holding classes remote due to burgeoning protest on campus. What's going on at Columbia?
You would never think you'd see this in America.
Have no words.
It's Monday, April 22nd. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1. Cue, please.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We are live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Here we are together.
Who's missing?
Nobody.
We're here. We're actually all here for the first time
really
in a
good.
Very long
really
time.
Really good. Really good.
A rough week last week. You're now talking about the S&P on track for its worst month since December of 2022. You have the S&P back below 5,000, and we are continuing to watch this pretty closely. This has all been happening as Treasury yields have been picking up over the last several weeks. You're going to see right now that it looks like the 10-year note is, all the way up to 4.658%. The two-year note almost at 5%. This has been a significant run in these bond yields. And again, that's been responsible for the April pullback that we've seen in stocks. That April pullback is actually responsible for erasing about half of the gains of the year that the market booked in the first quarter. We saw the highs, I believe, on March 28th. But you're still just talking about the S&P about 5.5% from its record close from back then.
It's been written now. Do interest rates even matter?
Yes.
You knew that was do they?
Yes.
Not doing anything to this economy.
Well, we will see whether they matter to earnings.
They've been down.
What Jamie Dimon say? 8% Fed funds is possible? Did you see that?
Told you he's been.
Well, he has. And we've
been,
seen
it. Nothing if but consistent. Nothing if but consistent.
He has. That seems like it would be significant.
On this vote, the yeas are 311 and the nays are 112. The bill is passed. Oh.
He's from Washington. This was significant over the weekend. On Saturday, the House passing a series of bills to provide aid to Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan, along with a bill that would force China's ByteDance to sell TikTok. Emily Wilkins joins us now with more. Do you like clock in on Saturdays and Sundays on weekends like that, Emily? Or you just do it for
on
us?
Weekends like this, you got to be paying attention, got to stay on top of it. But I mean, it was a working weekend for Congress too, right? You're not alone. So the House passed that $95 billion foreign aid bill for Ukraine, Israel, Indo-Pacific, and attached to that was a measure that had a couple different things, but most importantly, probably could lead to TikTok being banned in the U.S. if they don't divest from parent company ByteDance. That bill is now going to go to the Senate. They're expected to begin votes on Tuesday, could finalize votes on Tuesday as well. The legislation is likely to pass given that the chamber has already approved that foreign aid piece. Plus, the TikTok piece of the bill, that's gotten a key endorsement from Senator Maria Cantwell. She chairs the committee that's been overseeing TikTok. Now, the threat of a vote to oust Speaker Mike Johnson, it is still on the table after this weekend. A majority of Republicans voted against the $60 billion in funding for Ukraine. And Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene called Johnson a lame duck and said that he should resign. Yet, Johnson might wind up surviving a vote. Several Democrats have said that they would support keeping him in the speakership because he was willing to bring Ukraine aid to the floor. Republican Michael McCaul told ABC's This Week that Johnson is in good shape.
The stock of Mike Johnson's gone way up. I think the respect for him's gone way up because he did the right thing, irrespective of his job. that garnered a lot of respect.
We can say for sure that Johnson has at least one more week as speaker, mostly because House lawmakers are spending this week back in their districts, and they won't be back until the week after. And when they do, we will, of course, very closely be following the action, guys.
Thanks. I saw one headline that I think it was a CNN headline. Who knew that Mike Johnson was going to turn into Churchill? So it's weird. He's got getting support from some places and less so from others. I think he's solid. I think he's what do you think? I think he survives. That's what I mean.
If there was something, I would guess at this point.
I think in this particular moment, unfortunately.
Well, what does that mean?
Unfortunately, for Kevin McCarthy, nobody was calling him Churchill at
the
time.
I know.
And nobody was going to step in.
He was doing the same kind of, not exactly the same, but.
I don't know.
But then I worry about, you know, we got to do this with Ukraine. And then I saw for every one. I guess artillery shell that Ukraine fires, there's 10 Russian shells coming back. This is just going to stave off just in time. But then you just wonder, what's the end game? What is the end game? What is the end game? It'll stave it off once again, but you just wonder what the end game is.
That's the conundrum. Let's talk about this, because there's no end game in sight here. A dire warning from a Columbia University rabbi to Jewish students over the weekend. Rabbi Elie Bushler sending a message via WhatsApp yesterday morning urging Jewish students at the university to go home and to not return to campus because of, quote, extreme anti-Semitism. The warning coming as the campus has been the site now of anti-Israel protests, including one in which a protester suggested that students waving Israeli flags should be the next target of Hamas terrorists. New York Mayor Eric Adams getting involved over the weekend, mentioning that example in a statement last night, saying he was horrified and disgusted by the anti-Semitism being spewed at and around Columbia, telling the university effectively to reach out to the NYPD so they can get involved because it's a private campus. The NYPD is not on campus unless effectively they ask to bring them on campus. This morning, the president of Columbia announcing that all classes will be held virtually today to try to de-escalate the rancor. Of course, Columbia Business School has one of the most famous alumni in the world, Warren Buffett. There's a lot of very, very famed Wall Street alumni all over. You could go down the list. We'll see whether they end up speaking out about what's really happening on this campus. But just to see the images, you would never think you'd see this in America.
I have no words.
There aren't.
I have no words. I'm at a loss. But it's not the only thing that has me confused, dazed and confused.
There's a lot of confusing things going on in this country.
Next on Squawk Pod, Generation Z, disillusioned by capitalism, frustrated by the state of our democracy, pollster Frank Luntz says we cannot write off the youngest voices.
Are you paying attention? Are we going to make sure that the system works for everybody? And do you believe in some sense of integrity and honesty that when you make a commitment, you follow through?
We'll be right back.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Saturday, CNBC is your ticket to the annual Berkshire Hathaway meeting. Watch live on air or stream all the action at CNBC.com. Warren Buffett meets with shareholders, plus their questions, his answers. Becky Quick and Mike Santoli with full coverage from Omaha. Then re-rack the energy with highlights Monday morning starting on Squawk Box. The annual Berkshire Hathaway meeting, live on air and online, starts 9:30 Eastern, Saturday, CNBC.
This is Squawk Pod.
Stand by, Joe. His mic, Q.
You're watching Squawk Box on CNBC. I'm Joe Kernan, along with Becky Quick and Andrew Ross Sorkin. We're at full strength this morning. Feeling two of us well-rested.
I'm well-rested.
What the aura ring?
I just had the weekend.
What was the aura ring this morning?
Low 80s.
Low 80s isn't bad.
Sounds low 80s like isn't bad.
Pollster Frank Luntz recently hosted a focus group with Gen Z voters ages 18 to 24 from around the country. I want to show you what they had to say about capitalism versus socialism. It's eye-opening.
Socialism, because I think, frankly, capitalism is destroying our planet, where shareholders are going after profits at the expense of our environment, at the expense of the lives of humans.
Ultimately, capitalism is what makes America, you know, so sought after. It's why everybody wants to come here and not the other way around.
Capitalism encourages the exploitation of people. I think capitalism supports people who are already at the top.
I'm actually the son of Cuban refugees. So I understand firsthand how the dangers of socialism, and specifically its link to authoritarianism, can really destroy a country.
Joining us right now is pollster and political strategist Frank Luntz. He was the one who conducted that focus group, and it was pretty remarkable. I watched a large portion of it. Were you surprised by the language?
The language, I was surprised. I was not surprised about the conclusion. Young people are always to the left. But when they use a word like exploitation, when they talk about corruption or greed, those send off bells to me. And I'm warning Washington, D.C., that all this anger and all this frustration with the economy,
right.
No, it's not good. No, it's not working for them. And you better pay attention to this, because these young people are not just writing off politicians. That's right. The easy thing
but
to
here's
do.
But here's the question, then. Is the answer, when you say the government needs to be watching, right, that folks in Congress and the Senate need to be watching, there is a view among some, which is that to make it work for the American people better than it is today, the answer isn't necessarily capitalism per se, but it is maybe even more socialistic perspective, which is that we need to get more money into the hands of these people. And the question, of course, is how do you do that?
Well, the key for them is that road, that opportunity, that direction. And all they're asking for is a fighting chance. And if they see Washington behaving in such ways to deny them that chance, to tax them so much, to regulate them so much, the litigation, all these things that are happening right. to capitalism is undermining our faith, our trust, and our confidence.
Is that what you found, though, in the focus group itself?
In the focus group itself, they want to know that it is a level playing field. So basically, they want to take us back. I hate to use the phrase, but Reaganomics, take us back to the 1980s, 1990s, when people had a chance to move ahead. They had a chance to invest. They admire entrepreneurs. They admire small business owners, family businesses they admire. The big corporations, not so much.
Right.
And I wish that the business community also paid attention
when
to
Reagan
this.
Said that only one generation at a time can understand that capitalism is what works, and we can't pass it down through our genes to our next generation.
Well, we have to teach it, and that's the
what
problem.
I mean. That's what he said.
And in our schools, they're not in colleges now. They teach socialism. They tell the students that you're not getting a fair shake.
Do they teach what socialism? Now, socialism and communism are not the same thing, but sometimes one results in the other. It usually results in about 10 or 50 million people dead. We've tried this.
Well, what's
we haven't done it right yet? Is it the same old excuse? We've tried socialism, we just haven't done it right yet, right?
No, because I'm separating the politics. It's easy to get agitated. I don't want to get agitated.
This
is
just had 2 weeks off.
The core of our economy.
Let's show, because this speaks to some of this. Let's show the audience this. You asked a question about what America needs more of, meritocracy or equality. And I thought that was actually an interesting thing. A majority said they would choose equality. Take a look at this.
Meritocracy has its place, and I think that people are often rewarded for how hard they work, but I don't think equality is the right word. It should think maybe we should be talking about a third option, which is equity, because equality, I think, involves bringing some people down and raising others up, whereas if we get everybody up just to the same starting place, then we really could have a shot at meritocracy being very fruitful for people.
I think we can thrive under a meritocracy, but I think it's inherently not fair if we were to do that at the place we are now. Everyone needs to be at the same starting point.
That's an interesting conundrum, because we are all not at the same starting point, and the chances of that ever happening, I think, are nil.
Exactly. And that's the challenge here. Our country is based on the idea that you do more, you get more. You do better, you make better. And this is challenging that exactly. In the end, I look at this as an entire generation that's been educated to have resentment, to have a sense of denial, and it's now coming true in how our young people respond.
Let's show everybody the final question that you asked this group, and it is this. The question, if I recall it, was about democracy and the role of democracy, and really whether democracy is in danger, effectively, of failing.
A lot of it stems from the fact that we're constantly fighting with each other and we're not even trying to solve the issues that everyone sees. Our democracy is not going to continue to stand if we continue to fight the party lines.
I think about like January 6th, when we're talking about like politicians straight up lying to people about election fraud, things that are critical to our democracy, the foundation of America, making those things unstable, making it so that we question, have faith in our election system. I think that is extremely dangerous. I think that is dangerous to the very core of our democracy.
I trust them. These are not dumb people. In fact, I think they're very articulate. I may disagree with them, but they're hostile. Right. And the things I'm looking at right now, and you and I were talking off air about the Minnesota Timberwolves. Here's a great example. The owner sells the team to a new people.
Right. Mark Lohr, for those who don't know, who sold his business originally to Walmart, also A-Rod.
And that new owners have done a fantastic job. By 20%, which is a huge number, the fans want the new owners to own the team.
Right.
And yet the old owner is saying, oh, no. Now that we're doing well, I want the team back. That's crap. And I'm using very careful language here. This is why people have come to distrust capitalism, when they've come to distrust the system.
Right.
Because the old owner thinks he can steal it back, he's going to try. And the fans are saying, no way. So my question to people watching right now, are you paying attention? Are we going to make sure that the system works for everybody? And do you believe in some sense of integrity and honesty that when you make a commitment, you follow through?
Frank Luntz.
Did you see Anthony Edwards on Saturday night? You did?
Yes.
I had the Timberwolves. I can't believe it.
It's a great team now, and that's where the owner wants it back.
I would take this, 76ers, but.
Frank Luntz, I want to thank you very, very much.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for coming in.
Cheese will be next.
Coming up on Squawk Pod, corporate earnings season is in full swing and Verizon came out strong. CEO Hans Vestberg says inflation hasn't hit his internet business.
So far, we haven't seen any impact on our customers' payment readiness. They're stable.
We're back after this.
Saturday, CNBC is your ticket to the annual Berkshire Hathaway meeting. Watch live on air or stream all the action at CNBC.com. Warren Buffett meets with shareholders, plus their questions, his answers. Becky Quick and Mike Santoli with full coverage from Omaha. Then re-rack the energy with highlights Monday morning starting on Squawk Box. The annual Berkshire Hathaway meeting, live on air and online, starts 9:30 Eastern, Saturday, CNBC.
You're listening to Squawk Pod from CNBC with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Here's Andrew.
Meantime, Nike set to sign an 8-year deal worth up to $28 million with basketball star Caitlin Clark, beating out Adidas, Under Armour, and Puma. The Wall Street Journal reporting that Nike's offer includes a signature shoe. And given all the debate that we had just last week about how much Caitlin Clark was going to get from the WNBA, $76,000 a year, it's nice to see a $28 million pay package ahead of her from Nike.
We're in an interesting place with the WNBA right now.
Yeah.
Well, they're finally getting the viewership. And
getting viewership.
That in turn leads to
the draft. 3 million people watching the draft. And once again, I fell in love with the Caitlin Clark phenomenon.
Right.
If I had seen more of South Carolina, there's no way I would have bet on Iowa for that.
Did you see it? Unbelievable game.
That center?
Yeah.
Dominant. There's a lot. I think there may be more really good players than just Caitlin Clark. Big guy. guest here. Holy cow. Oh, thank you. In person.
Whoa. Suit, no socks.
Suit, no socks.
Suit, no socks.
This is Hans Vestberg we're talking about.
Hey.
He is joining us right now because Verizon's first quarter results just out this morning. The company actually beating estimates by 3 cents with adjusted quarterly profit of $1.15 a share. You can see the stock right now up by close to 2.4%. The chairman and the CEO, Hans Vestberg, is here to talk more about it. And Hans, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you. Great to be here as usual.
Great to see you.
Good morning.
So what happened? Numbers were better than the street was expecting, even though the revenue was just about in line.
Yeah, but what we're focused on, of course, is service revenue. Continued momentum since the second quarter last year. Now our service revenue growth was up 3.3% compared to one, little bit over one last year in this first quarter. Good momentum in our consumer business. Continue with our offerings that is really sounding well with our consumers. And then on the business side, on the wireless, we've been growing all the time. And then we're adding our broadband business. We're around 400,000 new net adds for the quarter that we've had for three, four quarters right now. Actually, we've added 18% more broadband subscribers in 1 year. We've just passed 11 million. So actually, all our businesses, our strategy is working, actually. And we had our challenges in 22. We didn't really perform. We did a lot of changes in the team, how we're offering to our products to our customers. So it was a good quarter, continued good momentum for us.
Yeah, subscriber base, broadband subscribers up 389,000. As you mentioned, it's been, I think it's been five quarters in a row now of about 400, north of just north of 500 or 400. What do you have to do right now to get those subscribers? Is part of it the streaming services that you guys have been pretty aggressive about partnering up with, Disney Plus?
Yeah, and we have exclusive distribution services with them. So I think what we have is, for the consumer side, very clear My Plan, which actually offering to our customer different type of network solutions. And then on top of that, we have inclusions with perks, everything. Right now we're running Netflix and Max. Only us can do that. Really working well with our customers. It's also a saving for our customers. So we just stack new additions and value for our customers. And that's also how we expand our ARPU with our customers, our average revenue per user. But we give more value as well. So that's just continue that. More innovation. I think the team has innovated really good on the consumer side. On the business side, we have been taking share for a very long time. We are number one on large enterprises. We're number one on SMBs and the government when it comes to wireless. So we have a very solid position in the market, and of course generating the highest EBITDA in the market as well. This quarter, $12.1 billion.
Can you give us any guidance in terms of what you expect broadband growth to be this year or wireless growth?
I think what we have said, we really, on the broadband side, we like being around 400,000. We think that's good because you optimize your efficiency, your capital, how you deploy it. So we like that number. When it comes to growth on wireless, what we have said, we're going to be positive this year on consumer net adds. Business side is basically positive on wireless net adds all the time, but consumer this year is going to be positive. We had actually our strongest year in consumer net adds in Q1 since 2018. And that's a quarter when we see what's happening around us. We see inflation, high interest rate. We actually have our best first quarter since 2018 on consumer side.
We've been talking to you for years about the growth of and what would happen with fixed line wireless.
Yes.
The idea that folks would have wireless broadband effectively to the home directly, bypassing cable. Of course, Comcast, an owner of this network, so we have a unique interest in this, but I think a lot of people do. Where are you really on that product?
The product is resonating extremely well with the market. I mean, it's an easy to install as you install it yourself. It's self-installed. It takes you 5 minutes to have broadband at home, and it works in any type of setup in a house or in residential. So the rollout is going really well, and as we turn on our C-band that we bought for 2 years ago, then we see the opportunity in every market.
But not yet.
Oh, we see it right now. I mean, of the almost 400,000 new net adds this quarter, the majority comes from fixed wireless access. Fios was a little bit over 50,000 new net adds. The rest is fixed wireless access. And it's not only for consumers. Think about that. Historically, we thought the idea of 5G to the home as broadband was mainly a consumer product. Today, we sell to small and medium businesses. We have the...
And you can get enough throughput for a small business?
Yeah, yeah, we guarantee 300. So it's an extraordinary, great experience. Our MPS is skyrocketing on fixed wireless access.
Hans, if you're getting so many subscribers right now, broadband and beyond, is that a reflection of a strong economy? You say it's despite inflationary costs. What do you see just in terms of the health of the consumer?
A couple of things. First of all, I see the same thing that everybody reads and what you are reporting here every morning. I think, first of all, our product, wireless and broadband, is so important for every individual, for every organization. I mean, you cannot live without it today. So our product is moving up. Secondly, our segmentation and having products all the way from low-income families to some more advanced plan, both on broadband and wireless, means that we can address the whole market. So I think that's, and then our quality of customers is the highest in the market. So far, we haven't seen any impacts on our customers' payment readiness. They are stable. So, which is probably a little bit different from others consumer brands. But I think the strength of the product, the strength of Verizon's customer base, and the segmentation we have done.
One thing you and the other telecom companies are all pretty aligned on is pushing back against some of the federal regulations to give access to lower income consumers at price caps for your product. Where does that stand right now?
So there is the program ACP, which is the government is a subsidy for low-income families. It seems like that will not be renewed. We have plans. We have Fios that is efficient for or low cost for low-income families. Of course, we have the full breadth of prepaid wireless that is also addressing that. So we will continue to address that opportunity and see that everyone in this country, regardless who they are, should have access to wireless and broadband.
But you don't want the federal government to push you to do this
program? No, this is a segmentation for us. I mean, I have products for all types of individuals, organizations on wireless and broadband. I mean, we are number one in this market by far, and our job is to see that we address all the opportunities in the market, and that we do. Think about it. We build the network once, and we want as many profitable connections on top of it to get the best return on invested capital. That's what we're doing.
Hans, I want to thank you for coming in. Shares right now up by 3.25%.
Okay.
Hans Vestberg.
That's the podcast for today. Thanks for listening. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Wasn't it nice to have all three of them back today? You can tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 Eastern, or get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears when you follow Squawk Pod, wherever you get your podcasts. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
Saturday, CNBC is your ticket to the annual Berkshire Hathaway meeting. Watch live on air or stream all the action at CNBC.com. Warren Buffett meets with shareholders, plus their questions, his answers. Becky Quick and Mike Santoli with full coverage from Omaha. Then re-rack the energy with highlights Monday morning starting on Squawk Box. The annual Berkshire Hathaway meeting, live on air and online, starts 9:30 Eastern, Saturday, CNBC.